Hauser and O'Brien. When they walked in on me that morning at 8 o'clock, I knew it was my last chance, my only chance. But they didn't know. How could they? Just a routine pickup, but not quite routine. Hauser had been eating breakfast when the lieutenant called. "I want you and your partner to pick up a man named Lee, William Lee, on your way downtown. He's in the Hotel Lamprey, 103, just off B-Way." "Yeah, I know where it is. I remember him, too." "Good. Room 606. Just pick him up. Don't take time to shake the place down. Except bring in all the books, letters, manuscripts, anything printed, typed, or written. Catch?" "Catch. But what's the angle? Books?" "Just do it." The lieutenant hung up. Hauser and O'Brien. They had been on the city narcotic squad for 20 years. Old-timers like me. I've been on the junk for 16 years. They weren't bad as laws go. At least O'Brien wasn't. O'Brien was the con man and Hauser the tough guy. A vaudeville team. Hauser had a way of hitting you before he said anything, just to break the ice. Then O'Brien gives you an old gold, just like a cop to smoke old gold somehow, and starts putting down a cop con that was really bottled in bond. Not a bad guy, and I didn't want to do it. But it was my only chance. I was just tying up for my morning shot when they walked in with a pass key. It was a special kind you can use even when the door is locked from the inside with a key in the lock. On the table in front of me was a packet of junk, spike, syringe. I got the habit of using a regular syringe in Mexico and never went back to using a dropper. Alcohol, cotton, and a glass of water.
"Well, well," says O'Brien. "Long time no see, eh?"
"Put on your coat, Lee," says Hauser. He had his gun out. He always has it out when he makes a pinch for the psychological effect and to forestall a rush for toilet, sink, or window.
"Can I take a bang first, boys?" I asked. "There's plenty here for evidence." I was wondering how I could get to my suitcase if they said no. The case wasn't locked, but Hauser had the gun in his hand.
"He wants a shot," said Hauser.
"Now, you know we can't do that, Bill," said O'Brien in his sweet, con voice, dragging out the name with an oily, insinuating familiarity, brutal and obscene. He meant, of course, "What can you do for us, Bill?"
He looked at me and smiled. The smile stayed there too long, hideous and naked, the smile of an old painted pervert gathering all the negative evil of O'Brien's ambiguous function.
"I might could set up Marty Steele for you," I said.
I knew they wanted Marty bad. He'd been pushing for 5 years, and they couldn't hang one on him. Marty was an old-timer, and very careful about who he served. He had to know a man, and know him well, before he would pick up his money. No one can say they ever did time because of me. My rep is perfect. But still, Marty wouldn't serve me because he didn't know me long enough. That's how skeptical Marty was.
"Marty," said O'Brien, "can you score from him?"
"Sure I can."
They were suspicious. A man can't be a cop all his life without developing a special set of intuitions.
"Okay," said Hauser finally. "But you'd better deliver, Lee."
"I'll deliver all right. Believe me, I appreciate this."
I tied up for a shot, my hands trembling with eagerness, an archetype dope fiend.
"Just an old junkie, boys. A harmless old shaking wreck of a junkie."
That's the way I put it down. As I had hoped, Hauser looked away when I started probing for a vein. It's a wildly unpretty spectacle. O'Brien was sitting on the arm of a chair, smoking an old gold, looking out the window with that dreamy, "what I'll do when I get my pension" look. I hit a vein right away. A column of blood shot up into the syringe for an instant, sharp and solid as a red cord. I pressed the plunger down with my thumb, feeling the junk pound through my veins to feed a million junk-hungry cells, to bring strength and alertness to every nerve and muscle. They were not watching me. I filled the syringe with alcohol. Hauser was juggling his snub-nosed detective special, a Colt, and looking around the room, he could smell danger like an animal. With his left hand, he pushed the closet door open and glanced inside. My stomach contracted. I thought, if he looks in the suitcase now, I'm done.
Hauser turned to me abruptly.
You through yet? He snarled. You'd better not try to shit us on Marty.
The words came out so ugly he surprised and shocked himself. I picked up the syringe full of alcohol, twisting the needle to make sure it was tight.
Just 2 seconds, I said.
I squirted a thin jet of alcohol, whipping it across his eyes with a sideways shake of the syringe. He let out a bellow of pain. I could see him pawing at his eyes with the left hand like he was tearing off an invisible bandage as I dropped to the floor on one knee, reaching for my suitcase. I pushed the suitcase open and my left hand closed over the gun butt. I am right-handed, but I shoot with my left hand. I felt the concussion of Hauser's shot before I heard it. His slug slammed into the wall behind me. Shooting from the floor, I snapped 2 quick shots into Hauser's belly, where his vest had pulled up, showing an inch of white shirt. He grunted in a way I could feel and doubled forward. Stiff with panic, O'Brien's hand was tearing at the gun in his shoulder holster. I clamped my other hand around my gun wrist to steady it for the long pull. This gun has the hammer filed off round, so you can only use it double action, and shot him in the middle of his red forehead, about 2 inches below the silver hairline. His hair had been gray the last time I saw him. That was about 15 years ago. My first arrest. His eyes went out. He fell off the chair onto his face. My hands were already reaching for what I needed, sweeping my notebooks into a briefcase with my works, junk, and a box of shells. I stuck the gun into my belt and stepped out into the corridor, putting on my coat. I could hear the desk clerk and the bellboy pounding up the stairs. I took the self-service elevator down, walked through the empty lobby into the street. It was a beautiful Indian summer day. I knew I didn't have much chance, but any chance is better than none, better than being a subject for experiments with ST-6, or whatever the initials are. I had to stock up on junk fast. Along with the airports, RR stations, and bus terminals, they would cover all junk areas and connections. I took a taxi to Washington Square, got out, and walked along 4th Street till I spotted Nick on a corner. You can always find the pusher. Your need conjures him up like a ghost. Listen, Nick, I said, I'm leaving town. I want to pick up a piece of H. Can you make it right now? We were walking along 4th Street. Nick's voice seemed to drift into my consciousness from no particular place. An eerie, disembodied voice.
Yes, I think I can make it. I'll have to make a run uptown.
We can take a cab.
Okay, but I can't take you into the guy, you understand?
I understand. Let's go. We were in the cab heading north. Nick was talking in his flat, dead voice.
Some funny stuff we're getting lately. It's not weak exactly. I don't know. It's different. Maybe they're putting some synthetic shit in it. Dollies or something.
What? Already?
Huh? But this I'm taking to you now is okay. In fact, it's about the best deal around that I know of. Stop here.
Please make it fast, I said.
It should be a matter of 10 minutes unless he's out of stuff and has to make a run. Better sit down over there and have a cup of coffee. This is a hot neighborhood.
I sat down at a counter and ordered coffee and pointed to a piece of Danish pastry under a plastic cover. I washed down the stale, rubbery cake with coffee, praying that just this once, please God, let him make it now and not come back to say the man is all out and has to make a run to East Orange or Greenpoint. Well, here he was back, standing behind me. I looked at him, afraid to ask. Funny, I thought, here I sit, with perhaps 1 chance in 100 to live out the next 24 hours. I had made up my mind not to surrender and spend the next 3 or 4 months in death's waiting room. And here I was, worrying about a junk score. But I only had about 5 shots left, and without junk I would be immobilized. Nick nodded his head. Don't give it to me here, I said. Let's take a cab. We took a cab and started downtown. I held out my hand and copped the package. Then I slipped a $50 bill into Nick's palm. He glanced at it and showed his gums in a toothless smile.
Thanks a lot. This'll put me in the clear.
I sat back, letting my mind work without pushing it. Push your mind too hard, it'll fuck up like an overloaded switchboard and turn on you with sabotage. And I had no margin for error. Americans have a special horror of giving up control, of letting things happen in their own way without interference.
They would like to jump down into their stomachs and digest the food and shovel the shit out. Your mind will answer most questions if you learn to relax and wait for the answer. Like one of those thinking machines, you feed in your question, sit back, and wait. I was looking for a name. My mind was sorting through names, discarding at once FL, Fuzz Lover, BW, Born Wrong, NCBC, Nice Cat, But Chicken, putting aside to reconsider, narrowing, sifting, feeling for the name, the answer. Sometimes, you know, he'll keep me waiting 3 hours. Sometimes I make it right away like this. Nick had a deprecating little laugh that he used for punctuation, sort of an apology for talking at all in the telepathizing world of the addict, where only the quantity factor, how much money, how much junk, requires verbal expression. He knew, and I knew, all about waiting. At all levels, the drug trade operates without schedule. Nobody delivers on time except by accident. The addict runs on junk time. His body is his clock, and junk runs through it like an hourglass. Time has meaning for him only with reference to his need. Then he makes his abrupt intrusion into the time of others, and, like all outsiders, all petitioners, he must wait, unless he happens to mesh with non-junk time.
What can I say to him? He knows I'll wait, Nick laughed.
I spent the night in the ever-hard baths. Homosexuality is the best all-around cover story an agent can use. Where a snarling Italian attendant creates such an unnerving atmosphere, sweeping the dormitory with infrared see-in-the-dark field glasses.
All right, in the northeast corner. I see you.
Switching on floodlights, sticking his head through trapdoors in the floor and wall of the private rooms, that many a queen has been carried out in a straitjacket. I lay there in my open-top cubicle room, looking at the ceiling, listened to the grunts and squeals and snarls in the nightmare half-light of random, broken lust.
Fuck off, you! Put on 2 pairs of glasses and maybe you can see something.
Walked out in the precise morning and bought a paper. Nothing. I called from a drugstore phone booth and asked for narcotics.
Lieutenant Gonzalez, who's calling?
I want to speak to O'Brien. A moment of static, dangling wires, broken connections.
Nobody of that name in this department. Who are you?
Well, let me speak to Hauser.
Look, mister, no O'Brien, no Hauser in this bureau. Now, what do you want?
Look, this is important. I've got info on a big shipment of H coming in. I want to talk to Hauser or O'Brien. I don't do business with anybody else.
Hold on. I'll connect you with Alcibiades.
I began to wonder if there was an Anglo-Saxon name left in the department. I want to speak to Hauser or O'Brien.
How many times I have to tell you no Hauser, no O'Brien in this department? Now, who is this calling?
I hung up and took a taxi out of the area. In the cab, I realized what had happened. I had been occluded from space-time like an eel's ass occludes when he stops eating on the way to Sargasso. Locked out. Never again would I have a key, a point of intersection. The heat was off me from here on out. Relegated with Hauser and O'Brien to a landlocked junk past, where heroin is always $28 an ounce and you can score for yen pox in the chink laundry of Sioux Falls. Far side of the world's mirror, moving into the past with Hauser and O'Brien, clawing at a not yet of telepathic bureaucracies, time monopolies, control drugs, heavy fluid addicts.
I thought of that 300 years ago. Your plan was unworkable then and useless now, like Da Vinci's flying machine plans.
Atrophied preface. Wouldn't you?
Why all this waste paper getting the people from one place to another? Perhaps to spare the reader's stress of sudden space shifts and keep him gentle? And so a ticket is bought, a taxi called, a plane boarded. We are allowed a glimpse into the warm, peach-lined cave as she, the airline hostess, of course, leans over us to murmur of chewing gum, Dramamine, even Nembutal.
Talk paregoric, sweet thing, and I will hear. I am not American Express. If one of my people is seen in New York walking around in citizen clothes, and next sentence Timbuktu putting down lad talk on a gazelle-eyed youth, we may assume that he, the party non-resident of Timbuktu, transported himself there by the usual methods of communication. Lee, the agent, a 448-16, is taking the junk cure. Space-time trip, portentously familiar as junk meat corners to the addict. Cures past and future, shuttle pictures through his spectral substance, vibrating in silent winds of accelerated time. Pick a shot, any shot. Formal knuckle-biting, floor-rolling shots in a precinct cell.
Feel like a shot of heroin, Bill?
Ha ha ha! Tentative half-impressions that dissolve in light, pockets of rotten ectoplasm swept out by an old junkie coughing and spitting in the sick morning. Old violet-brown photos that curl and crack like mud in the sun. Panama City. Bill Gaines putting down the paregoric con on a Chinese druggist.
I've got these racing dogs, pedigree, greyhounds, all sick with a dysentery. Tropical climate, the shits. Yusabe shit. My whippets are dying, he screamed.
His eyes lit up with blue fire. The flame went out. Smell of burning metal.
Administer with an eyedropper, wouldn't you? Menstrual cramps. My wife. Kotex. Aged mother. Piles. Raw. Bleeding.
He nodded out against the counter. The druggist took a toothpick out of his mouth and looked at the end of it, and shook his head. Gaines and Lee burned down the Republic of Panama from David to Darien on paregoric. They flew apart with a schlupping sound. Junkies tend to run together into one body. You have to be careful, especially in hot places. Gaines back to Mexico City. Desperate skeleton grin of chronic junk lack glazed over with codeine and goofballs. Cigarette holes in his bathrobe, coffee stains on the floor, smoky kerosene stove, rusty orange flame. The embassy would give no details other than place of burial in the American cemetery. And Lee, back to sex and pain and time and Yahi, bitter soul vine of the Amazon. I recall once after an overdose of Majun. This is cannabis, dried and finely powdered to consistency of green powdered sugar, and mixed with some confection or other, usually tasting like gritty plum pudding, but the choice of confection is arbitrary. I am returning from the Lulu, or Johnny, or Little Boy's Room, stink of atrophied infancy and toilet training. Look across the living room of that villa outside Tangier and suddenly don't know where I am. Perhaps I have opened the wrong door, and at any moment, the man in possession, the owner who got there first, will rush in and scream, "What are you doing here? Who are you?" And I don't know what I am doing there, nor who I am. I decide to play it cool, and maybe I will get the orientation before the owner shows. So instead of yelling, "Where am I?" cool it and look around, and you will find out, approximately. You were not there for the beginning. You will not be there for the end. Your knowledge of what is going on can only be superficial and relative. What do I know of this yellow, blighted young junkie face subsisting on raw opium? I tried to tell him, "Some morning you will wake up with your liver in your lap." On how to process raw opium so it is not plain poison. But his eyes glaze over, and he don't want to know. Junkies are like that, most of them, and they don't want to know. And you can't tell them anything. A smoker doesn't want to know anything but smoke. And a heroin junkie same way. Strictly the spike, and any other route is farina. So I guess he is still sitting there in his 1920 Spanish villa outside Tangier, eating that raw opium full of shit and stones and straw,
the whole lot, for fear he might lose something. There is only one thing a writer can write about. What is in front of his senses at the moment of writing? I am a recording instrument. I do not presume to impose story, plot, continuity, insofar as I succeed in direct recording of certain areas of psychic process, I may have limited function. I am not an entertainer. Possession, they call it. Sometimes an entity jumps in the body, outlines waver in yellow-orange jelly, and hands move to disembowel the passing whore or strangle the neighbor child in hope of alleviating a chronic housing shortage. As if I was usually there, but subject to goof now and again. Wrong! I am never here! Never, that is, fully in possession, but somehow in a position to forestall ill-advised moves. Patrolling is, in fact, my principal occupation. No matter how tight security, I am always somewhere outside giving orders, and inside this straitjacket of jelly that gives and stretches but always reforms ahead of every movement, thought, impulse, stamped with the seal of alien inspection. Writers talk about the sweet-sick smell of death, whereas any junkie can tell you that death has no smell. At the same time, a smell that shuts off breath and stops blood, colorless, no smell of death. No one can breathe and smell it through pink convolutions and black blood filters of flesh. The death smell is unmistakably a smell and complete absence of smell. Smell absence hits the nose first, because all organic life has smell. Stopping of smell is felt like darkness to the eyes, silence to the ears, stress and weightlessness to the balance and location sense. You always smell it and give it out for others to smell during junk withdrawal. A kicking junkie can make a whole apartment unlivable with his death smell. But a good airing will stink the place up again so a body can breathe. You also smell it during one of those oil burner habits that suddenly starts jumping geometric like a topping forest fire. Cure is always, let go! Jump! A friend of mine found himself naked in a Marrakesh hotel room second floor. He is after processing by a Texas mother who dressed him in girl's clothes as a child. Crude but effective against infant protoplasm. The other occupants are Arabs, three Arabs, knives in hand, watching him, glint of metal and points of light in dark eyes, pieces of murder falling slow as opal chips through glycerin. Slower animal reactions allow him a full second to decide, straight through the window and down into the crowded street, like a falling star, his wake of glass glittering in the sun. Sustained a broken ankle and a chipped shoulder, clad in a diaphanous pink curtain with a curtain rod staff, hobbled away to the commissariat de police. Sooner or later, the vigilante, the rube, Lee the agent, AJ, Clem and Jody, the Urgot twins, Hassan O'Leary, the afterbirth tycoon, the sailor, the exterminator, Andrew Keefe, Fats Terminal, Doc Benway, Fingers Schaefer, are subject to say the same thing in the same words, to occupy at that intersection point the same position in space-time, using a common vocal apparatus complete with all metabolic appliances, that is to be the same person, a most inaccurate way of expressing recognition, the junkie naked in sunlight. The writer sees himself reading to the mirror, as always. He must check now and again to reassure himself that the crime of separate action has not, is not, cannot occur. Anyone who has ever looked into a mirror knows what this crime is, and what it means in terms of lost control when the reflection no longer obeys. Too late to dial police. I personally wish to terminate my services as of now, in that I cannot continue to sell the raw materials of death. Yours, sir, is a hopeless case and a noisome one.
Defense is meaningless in the present state of our knowledge, said the defense, looking up from an electron microscope.
Take your business to Walgreens.
We are not responsible.
Steal anything in sight.
I don't know how to return it to the white reader.
You can write or yell or croon about it, paint about it, act about it, shit it out in mobiles, so long as you don't go and do it.
Senators leap up and bray for the death penalty with inflexible authority of virus yen.
Death for dope fiends, death for sex queens, fiends. Death for the psychopath who offends the cowed and graceless flesh with broken animal innocence of lithe movement. The black windsock of death undulates over the land, feeling, smelling for the crime of separate life, movers of the fear-frozen flesh shivering under a vast probability curve. Population blocks disappear in a checker game of genocide. Any number can play.
The liberal press, and the press not so liberal, and the press reactionary, scream approval.
Above all, the myth of other level experience must be eradicated.
And speak darkly of certain harsh realities. Cows with the aftosa. Prophylaxis. Power groups of the world frantically cut lines of connection. The planet drifts to random insect doom. Thermodynamics has won at a crawl. Oregon balked at the post. Christ bled. Time ran out. You can cut into naked lunch at any intersection point. I have written many prefaces. They atrophy and amputate spontaneous, like the little toe amputates in a West African disease confined to the Negro race, and the passing blonde shows her brass ankle as a manicured toe bounces across the club terrace, retrieved and laid at her feet by her Afghan hound. Naked lunch is a blueprint, a how-to book. Black insect lusts open into vast other planet landscapes. Abstract concepts, bare as algebra, narrowed down to a black turd or a pair of aging cojones. How to extend levels of experience by opening the door at the end of a long hall, doors that only open in silence. Naked lunch demands silence from the reader. Otherwise he is taking his own pulse. Robert Christie knew the answering service. Kill the old cunts. Keep pubic hairs in his locket. Wouldn't you? Robert Christie, mass strangler of women, sounds like a daisy chain. Hanged in 1953. Jack the Ripper, literal swordsman of the 1890s and never caught with his pants down, wrote a letter to the press.
Next time I'll send along an ear, just for jolly. Wouldn't you?
Oh, be careful. There they go again, said the old queen as his string broke, spilling his balls over the floor. Stop them, will you, James, you worthless old shit? Don't just stand there and let the master's balls roll into the coal bin.
Dilaudid deliver poor me. Dilaudid is souped-up dihydrate morphine. The sheriff in black vest types out a death warrant.
Gotta make it legal and exempt narcotic.
Violation, Public Health Law 334, procuring an orgasm by the use of fraud. Johnny on all fours and Mary sucking him and running her fingers down the thigh backs and light over the outfields of the ballpark. Over the broken chair and out through the tool house window, whitewash whipping in a cold spring wind on a limestone cliff over the river. Piece of moon smoke hangs in China blue sky.
out on a long line of jism across the dusty floor. Motel, motel, motel. Broken neon arabesque. Loneliness moans across the continent like foghorns over still, oily water of tidal rivers. Ball-squeezed dry lemon rinderpest rims the ass with a knife, cut off a piece of hash for the water pipe. Bubble, bubble. Indicate what used to be me.
The river is served, sir.
Dead leaves fill the fountain and geraniums run wild with mint. Spill a vending machine route across the lawn. The aging playboy dons his 1920 autograph slicker, feeds his screaming wife down the garbage disposal unit. Hair, shit, and blood spurt out 1963 on the wall.
Yes, sir, boys, the shit really hit the fan in 63, said the tiresome old prophet,
can bore the piss out of you in any space-time direction.
Now I happen to remember, because it was just 2 years before that, a strain of human aftosa developed in a Bolivian lavatory, got loose through the medium of a chinchilla coat, fixed an income tax case in Kansas City, and a Liz claimed immaculate conception and give birth to a 6-ounce spider monkey through the navel. They say the croaker was party to that caper, had the monkey on his back all the time.
I, William Seward, captain of this lushed-up hash-head subway, will quell the Loch Ness monster with rotenone and cowboy the white whale. I will reduce Satan to automatic obedience and sublimate subsidiary fiends. I will banish the candiru from your swimming pools. I will issue a bull on immaculate birth control.
The oftener a thing happens, the more uniquely wonderful it is, said the pretentious young Nordic on the trapeze studying his Masonic homework. The Jews don't believe in Christ, Clem. All they want to do is doodle a Christian girl.
Adolescent angels sing on shithouse walls of the world.
Come and jack off,
1929.
Gimpy push milk sugar shit.
Johnny hung lately, 1952. Decayed, corseted tenor sings Danny Deaver in drag. Mules don't foal in this decent county, and no hooded dead gibber in the ash pits. Violation Public Health Law 334. So where is the statuary and the percentage? Who can say, I don't have the word? Home in my douchebag. The king is loose with a flamethrower, and the king killer, tortured in effigy of 1,000 bums, slides down Skid Row to shit in the limestone ball court. Young Dillinger walked straight out of the house and never looked back.
Don't ever look back, kid. You turn into some old cow's salt lick.
Police bullet in the alley. Broken wings of Icarus. Screams of a burning boy inhaled by the old junkie, eyes empty as a vast plain, vulture wings husk in the dry air. The crab, aged dean of lush workers, puts on his crustacean suit to prowl the graveyard shift, with steel claws pulls the gold teeth and crowns of any flop sleep with his mouth open. If the flop comes up on him, the crab rears back, claws snapping, to offer dubious battle on the plains of Queens. The boy burglar, fucked in the long jail term, ousted from the cemetery for the non-payment, comes gibbering into the queer bar with a moldy pawn ticket to pick up the back balls of Tent City, where castrate salesmen sing the IBM song. Crabs frolicked through his forest, wrestling with the angel hard on all night, thrown in the homo fall of valor, take a back road to the rusty limestone cave. Black yen ejaculates over the salt marshes where nothing grows, not even a mandrake. Law of averages, a few chickens. Only way to live.
Hello, Cash.
You sure it's here?
Of course I'm sure. Go in with you.
Night train to Chai.
meet a girl in the hall, and I see she is on, and ask, where is a score?
Come in, sonny.
I mean, not a young chick, but built. How about a fix first?
Ixnay, you wouldn't be in a condition.
3 times around. Wake up shivering, sick in warm spring wind through the window. Water burns the eyes like acid. She gets out of bed naked, stash in the cobra lamp. Cooks up.
Turn over, I'll give it to you in the ass.
She slides the needle in deep, pulls it out and massages the cheek. She licks a drop of blood off her finger. He rolls over with a hard-on, dissolving in the gray ooze of junk. In a veil of cocaine and innocence, sad-eyed youths yodel for a lost Danny boy. We sniffed all night and made it 4 times. Fingers down the blackboard, scrape the white bone. Home is the heroine, home from the sea, and the hustler home from the bill. The pitchman stirs uneasily. Take over here, will you, kid? Gotta see a man about a monkey. The word is divided into units, which be all in one piece and should be so taken, but the pieces can be had in any order, being tied up back and forth, in and out, fore and aft, like an interesting sex arrangement. This book spill off the page in all directions, kaleidoscope of vistas, medley of tunes and street noises, farts and riot yips and the slamming steel shutters of commerce, screams of pain and pathos and screams of plain pathic, copulating cats, an outraged squawk of the displaced bullhead, prophetic mutterings of brujo in nutmeg trance. Snapping necks and screaming mandrakes, sigh of orgasm, heroin silent as dawn in the thirsty cells, Radio Cairo screaming like a berserk tobacco auction, and flutes of Ramadan fanning the sick junkie like a gentle lush worker in the gray subway dawn, feeling with delicate fingers for the green folding crackle. This is revelation and prophecy of what I can pick up without FM on my 1920 crystal set with antennae of jism. Gentle reader, we see God through our assholes in the flashbulb of orgasm. Through these orifices, transmute your body. The way out is the way in. Now I, William Seward, will unlock my word hoard. My Viking heart fares over the great brown river where motors putt-putt in jungle twilight and whole trees float with huge snakes in the branches and sad-eyed lemurs watch the shore across the Missouri field. The boy finds a pink arrowhead. Out along distant train whistles, comes back to me hungry as a street boy, don't know to peddle the ass God gave him. Gentle reader, the word will leap on you with leopard man iron claws. It will cut off fingers and toes like an opportunist land crab. It will hang you and catch your jism like a scrutable dog. It will coil round your thighs like a bushmaster and inject a shot glass of rancid ectoplasm. And why a scrutable dog? The other day I'm returning from the long lunch thread from mouth to ass all the days of our years when I see an Arab boy have this little black and white dog know how to walk on his hind legs, and a big yaller dog come on the boy for affection, and the boy shove it away, and the yaller dog growl and snap at the little toddler, snarling if he had but human gift of tongues, a crime against nature right there. So I dub the yaller dog scrutable. And let me say in passing, and I am always passing like a sincere spade, that the inscrutable East need a heap of salt to get it down. Your reporter bang 30 grains of M a day and sit 8 hours inscrutable as a turd.
What are you thinking? Says
the squirming American tourist. To which I reply,
Morphine having depressed my hypothalamus, seat of libido and emotion, and since the front brain acts only at second hand with back brain titillation, being a vicarious-type citizen can only get his kicks from behind, I must report virtual absence of cerebral event. I am aware of your presence, but since it has for me no affective connotation, my affect having been disconnected by the junk man for the non-payment, I am not interested in your doings. Go or come, shit or fuck yourself with a rasp or an asp. 'Tis well done and fitting for a queen. But the dead and the junkie don't care. They are inscrutable.
"Which is the way down the aisle to the water closet?" I asked the blonde usherette. "Right through here, sir. Room for one more inside."
"Have you seen Pant Upon Rose?" said the old junkie in the black overcoat.
"The Texas sheriff has killed his complicit vet, Brubeck the Unsteady, involved in horse heroin racket. A horse down with the aftosa need a sight of heroin to ease his pain. And maybe some of that heroin take off across the lonesome prairie in Whinny and Washington Square. Junkies rush up, yelling,
'Hi-ho, silver!'
But where is the statuary?"
"This archetype bit of pathos screeched out in a tea-room cocktail lounge with bamboo decorations, Calle Juarez, Mexico, DF. Lost back there with a meatball rape rap. A cunt claw your pants down and you up for rape that's statutory, brother. Chicago calling.
Come in, please. Chicago calling. Come in, please.
What you think I got the rubber on for, galoshes and puyo? A mighty wet place, reader."
"Take it off! Take it off!"
The old queen meets himself coming round the other way in a burlesque of adolescence. Gets the knee from his phantom of the old Howard. Down Skid Row to Market Street, museum shows all kinds, masturbation and self-abuse. Young boys need it special. They was ripe for the plucking, forgot way back yonder in the cornhole, lost in little scraps of delight and burning scrolls. Read the metastasis with blind fingers. Fossil message of arthritis.
Selling is more of a habit than using. Lola La Chata, Mexico, DF.
Sucking terror from needle scars, underwater scream, mouthing, numb nerve warnings of the yen to come, throbbing bite sight of rabies. "If God made anything better, he kept it for himself," the sailor used to say. His transmission slowed down with 20 goofballs. Pieces of murder fall slow as opal chips through glycerin. Watching you and humming over and over, Johnny's so long at the fair. Pushing in a small way to keep up our habit. "And use that alcohol," I say, slamming a spirit lamp down on the table. "You fucking can't wait hungry junkies all the time black up my spoons with matches. That's all I need for pen in def. The heat rumbles a black spoon in the trap. I thought you was quitting. Wouldn't feel right fucking up your cure. Takes a lot of guts to kick a habit, kid." Looking for veins in the thawing flesh, hourglass of junk spills its last black grains into the kidneys.
"Heavily infected area," he muttered, shifting the tie-up.
"Death was their culture, hero,"
said my old lady, looking up from the Mayan codices. "They got fire and speech and the corn seed from death. Death turns into a maize seed. The Uab days are upon us. Raw, peeled winds of hate and mischance blew the shot."
"Get those fucking dirty pictures out of here," I told her.
The old-time schmecker supported himself on a chair back, juiced and goofballed, a disgrace to his blood.
"What are you, one of those goofball artists?"
Yellow smells of Skid Row sherry and occluding liver drifted out of his clothes when he made the junkie gesture, throwing the hand out, palm up, to cop. Smell of chilly houses and dank overcoats and atrophied testicles.
He looked at me through the tentative ectoplasmic flesh of cure. 30 pounds materialized in a month when you kick. Soft pink putty that fades at the first silent touch of junk. I saw it happen. 10 pounds lost in 10 minutes. Standing there with the syringe in one hand, holding his pants up with the other. Sharp reek of diseased metal. Walking in a rubbish heap to the sky. Scattered gasoline fires. Smoke hangs black and solid as excrement in the motionless air, smudging the white film of noon heat. D.L. walks beside me, a reflection of my toothless gums and hairless skull, flesh smeared over the rotting phosphorescent bones consumed by slow, cold fires. He carries an open can of gasoline, and the smell of gasoline envelops him. Coming over a hill of rusty iron, we meet a group of natives, flat, two-dimension faces of scavenger fish. Throw the gasoline on them and light it. Quick. White flash. Mangled insect screams. I woke up with the taste of metal in my mouth, back from the dead. Trailing the colorless death smell, afterbirth of a withered gray monkey, phantom twinges of amputation. Taxi boy's waiting for a pickup, Eduardo said, and died of an overdose in Madrid. Powder trains burn back through pink convolutions of tumescent flesh, set off flash bulbs of orgasm. Pinpoint photos of arrested motion, smooth brown side twisted to light a cigarette. He stood there in a 1920 straw hat somebody gave him, soft, mendicant words falling like dead birds in the dark street.
No. No more. No más.
A heaving sea of air hammers in the purple-brown dusk, tainted with rotten metal smell of sewer gas. Young worker faces vibrating out of focus in yellow halos of carbide lanterns, broken pipes exposed.
They are rebuilding the city.
Lee nodded absently.
Yes. Always.
Either way is a bad move to the East Wing. If I knew, I'd be glad to tell you.
No good. No bueno. Hustling myself.
No glad.
Clam Friday.
Tangier, 1959. Original introductions and additions by the author. Deposition. Testimony concerning a sickness. I awoke from the sickness at the age of 45, calm and sane, and in reasonably good health except for a weakened liver and the look of borrowed flesh common to all who survived the sickness. Most survivors do not remember the delirium in detail. I apparently took detailed notes on sickness and delirium. I have no precise memory of writing the notes, which have now been published under the title Naked Lunch. The title was suggested by Jack Kerouac. I did not understand what the title meant until my recent recovery. The title means exactly what the words say. Naked Lunch. A frozen moment when everyone sees what is on the end of every fork. The sickness is drug addiction. And I was an addict for 15 years. When I say addict, I mean an addict to junk, generic term for opium and or derivatives, including all synthetics from Demerol to Palfium. I have used junk in many forms, morphine, heroin, dilaudid, eucadol, pantopan, diacidid, diosane, opium, Demerol, dolophine, Palfium. I have smoked junk, eaten it, sniffed it, injected it in vein, skin, muscle, inserted it in rectal suppositories. The needle is not important. Whether you sniff it, smoke it, eat it, or shove it up your ass, the result is the same. Addiction.
When I speak of drug addiction, I do not refer to kief, marijuana, or any preparation of hashish, mescaline, banisteriopsis, caopy, LSD-6, sacred mushrooms, or any other drug of the hallucinogen group. There is no evidence that the use of any hallucinogen results in physical dependence. The action of these drugs is physiologically opposite to the action of junk. A lamentable confusion between the two classes of drugs has arisen owing to the zeal of the U.S. and other narcotic departments. I have seen the exact manner in which the junk virus operates through 15 years of addiction. The pyramid of junk, one level eating the level below. It is no accident that junk higher-ups are always fat and the addict in the street is always thin. Right up to the top, or tops, since there are many junk pyramids feeding on peoples of the world and all built on basic principles of monopoly. 1. Never give anything away for nothing. 2. Never give more than you have to give. Always catch the buyer hungry and always make him wait. 3. Always take everything back if you possibly can. The pusher gets it all back. The addict needs more and more junk to maintain a human form. Buy off the monkey. Junk is the mold of monopoly and possession. The addict stands by while his junk legs carry him straight in on the junk beam to relapse. Junk is quantitative and accurately measurable. The more junk you use, the less you have, and the more you have, the more you use. All the hallucinogen drugs are considered sacred by those who use them. There are peyote cults and banisteriopsis cults, hashish cults and mushroom cults. The sacred mushrooms of Mexico enable a man to see God. But no one ever suggested that junk is sacred. There are no opium cults. Opium is profane and quantitative like money. I have heard that there was once a beneficent, non-habit-forming junk in India. It was called Soma, and is pictured as a beautiful blue tide. If Soma ever existed, the pusher was there to bottle it and monopolize it and sell it, and it turned into plain old-time junk. Junk is the ideal product, the ultimate merchandise. No sales talk necessary. The client will crawl through a sewer and beg to buy. The junk merchant does not sell his product to the consumer. He sells the consumer to his product. He does not improve and simplify his merchandise. He degrades and simplifies the client. He pays his staff in junk. Junk yields a basic formula of evil virus, the algebra of need. The face of evil is always the face of total need. A dope fiend is a man in total need of dope. Beyond a certain frequency, need knows absolutely no limit or control. In the words of total need, wouldn't you? Yes, you would. You would lie, cheat, inform on your friends, steal, do anything to satisfy total need. Because you would be in a state of total sickness, total possession, and not in a position to act in any other way. Dope fiends are sick people who cannot act other than they do. A rabid dog cannot choose but bite. Assuming a self-righteous position is nothing to the purpose, unless your purpose be to keep the junk virus in operation. And junk is a big industry. I recall talking to an American who worked for the Aftosa Commission in Mexico. $600 a month plus expense account. How long will the epidemic last? I inquired. As long as we can keep it going. And yes, maybe the Aftosa will break out in South America, he said dreamily. If you wish to alter or annihilate a pyramid of numbers in a serial relation, you alter or remove the bottom number. If we wish to annihilate the junk pyramid, we must start with the bottom of the pyramid, the addict in the street, and stop tilting quixotically for the higher-ups, so-called, all of whom are immediately replaceable. The addict in street who must have junk to live is the one irreplaceable factor in the junk equation. When there are no more addicts to buy junk,
there will be no junk traffic. As long as junk need exists, someone will service it. Addicts can be cured or quarantined. That is, allowed a morphine ration under minimal supervision, like typhoid carriers. When this is done, junk pyramids of the world will collapse. So far as I know, England is the only country to apply this method to the junk problem. They have about 500 quarantined addicts in the UK. In another generation, when the quarantined addicts die off and painkillers operating on a non-junk principle are discovered, the junk virus will be like smallpox, a closed chapter, a medical curiosity. The vaccine that can relegate the junk virus to a landlocked past is in existence. This vaccine is the apomorphine treatment discovered by an English doctor whose name I must withhold, pending his permission to use it, and to quote from his book covering 30 years of apomorphine treatment of addicts and alcoholics. The compound apomorphine is formed by boiling morphine with hydrochloric acid. It was discovered years before it was used to treat addicts. For many years, the only use for apomorphine, which has no narcotic or pain-killing properties, was as an emetic to induce vomiting in cases of poisoning. It acts directly on the vomiting center in the back brain. I found this vaccine at the end of the junk line. I lived in one room in the native quarter of Tangier. I had not taken a bath in a year, nor changed my clothes or removed them except to stick a needle every hour in the fibrous, gray, wooden flesh of terminal addiction. I never cleaned or dusted the room. Empty ampule boxes and garbage piled to the ceiling, light and water long since turned off for non-payment. I did absolutely nothing. I could look at the end of my shoe for 8 hours. I was only roused to action when the hourglass of junk ran out. If a friend came to visit, and they rarely did, since who or what was left to visit, I sat there, not caring that he had entered my field of vision, a gray screen always blanker and fainter, and not caring when he walked out of it. If he had died on the spot, I would have sat there looking at my shoe, waiting to go through his pockets. Wouldn't you? Because I never had enough junk. No one ever does. 30 grains of morphine a day, and it still was not enough. And long waits in front of the drugstore. Delay is a rule in the junk business. The man is never on time. This is no accident. There are no accidents in the junk world. The addict is taught again and again exactly what will happen if he does not score for his junk ration. Get up that money, or else. And suddenly my habit began to jump and jump, 40, 60 grains a day, and it still was not enough, and I could not pay. I stood there with my last check in my hand and realized that it was my last check. I took the next plane for London. The doctor explained to me that apomorphine acts on the back brain to regulate the metabolism and normalize the bloodstream in such a way that the enzyme system of addiction is destroyed over a period of 4 or 5 days. Once the back brain is regulated, apomorphine can be discontinued and only used in case of relapse. No one would take apomorphine for kicks. Not one case of addiction to apomorphine has ever been recorded. I agreed to undergo treatment and entered a nursing home. For the first 24 hours, I was literally insane and paranoid, as many addicts are in severe withdrawal. This delirium was dispersed by 24 hours of intensive apomorphine treatment. The doctor showed me the chart. I had received minute amounts of morphine that could not possibly account for my lack of the more severe withdrawal symptoms, such as leg and stomach cramps, fever, and my own special symptom, the cold burn, like a vast hives covering the body and rubbed with menthol. Every addict has his own special symptom that cracks all control. There was a missing factor in the withdrawal equation. That factor could only be apomorphine. I saw the apomorphine treatment really work. 8 days later, I left the nursing home, eating and sleeping normally. I remained completely off junk for 2 full years.
a 12-year record. I did relapse for some months as a result of pain and illness. Another apomorphine cure has kept me off junk through this writing. The apomorphine cure is qualitatively different from other methods of cure. I have tried them all. Short reduction, slow reduction, cortisone, antihistamines, tranquilizers, sleeping cures, Tulserol, Reserpine. None of these cures lasted beyond the first opportunity to relapse. I can say definitely that I was never metabolically cured until I took the apomorphine cure. The overwhelming relapse statistics from the Lexington Narcotic Hospital have led many doctors to say that addiction is not curable. They use a dolophine reduction cure at Lexington and have never tried apomorphine, so far as I know. In fact, this method of treatment has been largely neglected. No research has been done with variations of the apomorphine formula or with synthetics. No doubt substances 50 times stronger than apomorphine could be developed and the side effect of vomiting eliminated. Apomorphine is a metabolic and psychic regulator that can be discontinued as soon as it has done its work. The world is deluged with tranquilizers and energizers, but this unique regulator has not received attention. No research has been done by any of the large pharmaceutical companies. I suggest that research with variations of apomorphine and synthesis of it will open a new medical frontier, extending far beyond the problem of addiction. The smallpox vaccine was opposed by a vociferous lunatic group of anti-vaccinationists. No doubt a scream of protest will go up from interested or unbalanced individuals as the junk virus is shot out from under them. Junk is big business. There are always cranks and operators. They must not be allowed to interfere with the essential work of inoculation treatment and quarantine. The junk virus is public health problem number one of the world today. Since Naked Lunch treats this health problem, it is necessarily brutal, obscene, and disgusting. Sickness is often repulsive details, not for weak stomachs. Certain passages in the book that have been called pornographic were written as a tract against capital punishment in the manner of Jonathan Swift's Modest Proposal. These sections are intended to reveal capital punishment as the obscene, barbaric, and disgusting anachronism that it is. As always, the lunch is naked. If civilized countries want to return to druid hanging rites in the sacred grove, or to drink blood with the Aztecs and feed their gods with blood of human sacrifice, let them see what they actually eat and drink. Let them see what is on the end of that long newspaper spoon. I have almost completed a sequel to Naked Lunch, a mathematical extension of the algebra of need beyond the junk virus. Because there are many forms of addiction, I think that they all obey basic laws. In the words of Heisenberg, this may not be the best of all possible universes, but it may well prove to be one of the simplest. If man can see. William S. Burroughs, 1960. Postscript. Wouldn't you? And speaking personally, and if a man speaks any other way, we might as well start looking for his protoplasm daddy or mother cell. I don't want to hear any more tired old junk talk and junk con. The same thing said a million times and more, and there is no point in saying anything because nothing ever happens in the junk world. Only excuse for this tired death route is the kick. When the junk circuit is cut off for the non-payment, and the junk skin dies of junk lack, an overdose of time, and the old skin has forgotten the skin game, simplifying away under the junk cover the way skins will.
A condition of total exposure is precipitated when the kicking addict cannot choose but see, smell, and listen. Watch out for the cars. It is clear that junk is around the world push an opium pellet with your nose route. Strictly for scarabs, stumble bum, junk heap. And as such, report to disposal. Tired of seeing it around. Junkies always beef about the cold, as they call it, turning up their black coat collars and clutching their withered necks. Pure junk con. A junkie does not want to be warm. He wants to be cool, cooler, cold. But he wants the cold like he wants his junk. Not outside, where it does him no good, but inside, so he can sit around with a spine like a frozen hydraulic jack, his metabolism approaching absolute zero. Terminal addicts often go 2 months without a bowel move, and the intestines make with sit-down adhesions. Wouldn't you? Requiring the intervention of an apple corer or its surgical equivalent. Such is life in the old ice house. Why move around and waste time?
Room for one more inside, sir.
Some entities are on thermodynamic kicks. They invented thermodynamics. Wouldn't you? And some of us are on different kicks. And that's a thing out in the open, the way I like to see what I eat, and vice versa, mutatis mutandis, as the case may be. Bill's Naked Lunch Room. Step right up. Good for young and old, man and bestial. Nothing like a little snake oil to grease the wheels and get a show on the track, Jack. Which side are you on? Frozen hydraulic? Or you want to take a look around with Honest Bill? So that's the world health problem I was talking about back in the article. The prospect before us, friends of mine... Do I hear muttering about a personal razor and some bush league short con artist who is known to have invented the bill? Wouldn't you? The razor belonged to a man named Occam, and he was not a scar collector. Ludwig Wittgenstein, Tractatus Logico-Philosophicus. If a proposition is not necessary, it is meaningless and approaching meaning zero. And what is more unnecessary than junk if you don't need it? Answer. Junkies, if you are not on junk. I tell you, boys, I've heard some tired conversation, but no other occupation group can approximate that old thermodynamic junk. Slow down. Now, your heroin addict does not say hardly anything, and that I can stand. But your opium smoker... is more active since he still has a tent and a lamp, and maybe 7, 9, 10 lying up in there like hibernating reptiles keep the temperature up to talking level. How low the other junkies are, whereas we have this tent and this lamp and this tent and this lamp and this tent and nice and warm in here, nice and warm, nice and in here, and nice and outside. It's cold outside, where the dross eaters and the needle boys won't last 2 years, not 6 months, hardly won't last stumble bum around, and there is no class in them, but we sit here and never increase the dose, never increase the dose, never, except tonight is a special occasion with all the dross eaters and needle boys out there in the cold, and we never eat it, never eat it. Excuse, please, while I take a trip to the source of living drops they all have in pocket and opium pellets shoved up the ass in a finger stall with the family jewels and the other shit.
Room for one more inside, sir.
Well, when that record starts around for the billionth light year, and never the tape shall change us non-junkies, take drastic action, and the men separate out from the junk boys. Only way to protect yourself against this horrid peril is come over here and shack up with Charybdis. Treat you right, kid. Candy and cigarettes. I am after 15 years in that tent.
in and out, in and out, in and out, over and out. So listen to old Uncle Bill Burroughs, who invented the Burroughs adding machine regulator gimmick on the hydraulic jack principle. No matter how you jerk the handle, result is always the same for given coordinates. Got my training early. Wouldn't you? Paregoric babies of the world, unite. We have nothing to lose but our pushers, and they are not necessary. Look down, along that junk road before you travel there and get in with the wrong mob. A word to the wise guy. William S. Burroughs, 1960. Afterthoughts on a Deposition. When I say I have no memory of writing Naked Lunch, this is, of course, an exaggeration, and it is to be kept in mind that there are various areas of memory. Junk is a painkiller. It also kills the pain and pleasure implicit in awareness. While the factual memory of an addict may be quite accurate and extensive, his emotional memory may be scanty, and, in the case of heavy addiction, approaching affective zero. When I say the junk virus is public health problem number one of the world today, I refer not just to the actual ill effects of opiates upon the individual's health, which in cases of controlled dosage may be minimal, but also to the hysteria that drug use often occasions in populaces who are prepared by the media and narcotics officials for a hysterical reaction. The junk problem in its present form began with the Harrison Narcotics Act of 1914 in the United States. Anti-drug hysteria is now worldwide, and it poses a deadly threat to personal freedoms and due process protections of the law everywhere. William S. Burroughs, October 1991.